Hey, it's Don Winkle here from John Carroll University. Well done, Call, on 100 episodes of The Reasonable Adventurer, and continue the good work.
It's time for another show from Colin Jones, The Reasonable Adventurer. Time for you to take another step towards creating your own opportunities for satisfaction.
And it is a huge welcome to episode 100 of The Reasonable Adventurer. Yes, we finally made it. And, you know, what do? Episode 100, you've got to do something that seems a bit special, yeah? You know, in the past, we've headed on down to Wales. We've been to the Penaluna Palace. We've stopped in London and done a couple of live shows from King's Cross Station. I thought we might head a bit north. I thought we might just go a little bit north up into that beautiful city of York, and we might just see if we can hit Harrington's Hitchhiker Highway. Let's see if we can raise Peter Harrington.
Hello, it's Peter.
Peter, Colin, mate, how are you?
Colin, how are you? Yes, I'm fine, thank you.
Mate, I've heard a rumour that we're both sitting on 99 blogs and 99 podcast shows.
Yes, that's absolutely true. The Hitchhiker's Guide to Entrepreneurship, 99 posts, and I also heard that you were on 99, and, you know, well, it seems to be quite an opportunity.
Well, I think so, mate. I think so. Absolutely. I mean, so there's a fair bit of reflection that's got to go on, isn't there, for us to actually get to 99 of anything.
Yeah, I mean, I remember thinking in my bed at 3 a.m. in Florida, you know, wow, you know, all my years of hitchhiking, and then thought about all the years of starting and running businesses and the parallels between them, and just inspired me to sort of write the blog and share what I was doing and reading, and all of those reflections have gone into those 99 blogs. And I listened to your work and, you know, and all the stuff you've read and where you've been, and, you know, it's all very powerful, reflective stuff.
You've been, from memory, you've had about 12 years out there hitchhiking, so that in itself is interesting. But you've started a stack of companies in the UK since you left uni many, many years ago. And you're now the CEO of SimVenture, which for many of our audience, they'll be very familiar with it. But for those who don't, it's a business simulation process which allows students to get in and start making decisions. And I think you're even the entrepreneur in residence at, is it London South Bank University?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm the, I think there's two or three of us, but yes, I'm an entrepreneur in residence at London South Bank, and love that work. It gives me a chance sort of one day a month to go and listen to and question students and postgrads who are starting businesses, and you know, and work with them and see them on the very early stages of their journey.
Yeah, it is interesting, and I mean, I think in a lot of ways our work overlaps, even though we're coming at it from quite different, you know, I'm being paid, you know, to simply teach people, and obviously in my own time I reflect have been sort of really fixated on helping people to contemplate this notion of a reasonable adventurer. But you and yourself, to, you know, to carve out a living, you're trying to create parallel processes that allow other people to sort of walk in your shoes and to sort of, I suppose, to be able to sort of understand some of the challenges that you've experienced in your own business life, but you now find a way of creating this analogous connection to with your past living in your hitchhiking world.
Well, I'm a great believer in trying to work out what your talent is and what your passion is. And after years of running the research and marketing agency, you know, I knew that I wanted to be back or be in education, because my heart's in education. And I also could see so many people starting and or trying to start businesses and failing. And for me, you know, just like the way pilots learn, it just made sense that, look, we need to allow people to fail or fail a lot before they start for real. Because you get a lot of flawed assumptions out before, you know, the real dangerous stuff starts, where you can lose money or, you know, it becomes emotionally painful. So that's what got me into the whole simulation world back in, well, crikey, 2003, 2004 now.
So from where you sit at the moment, Peter, What do you see as the biggest challenges that that young people face? Not just young people, but really anyone who's wanting to step into that space when they're going to try and sort of try to create some value that's that can be captured.
It's a great question. What is the biggest challenge? And I would definitely, if I was standing in front of 1,000 people starting up or thinking of starting up, this is exactly what I'd say to them, regardless of country, because I think this transcends borders. And the biggest challenge is the need to, or people's inability to want to, get out of the building. Way too much time is spent sort of polishing websites or writing plans or bids, doing stuff which is nice, but ultimately it could be flawed because it's not necessarily what people who will pay for your product or service will purchase. And getting out of the building and talking to people, prospective customers, and asking them questions and listening to that feedback and taking the pain, because it's typically stuff you didn't expect or didn't want to hear, and then using that information to shape what you're doing. This is the biggest challenge, because either people aren't getting out of the building, or if they are, when they're asking the questions, they don't really want to listen to what they're hearing. And unfortunately, the consequences come later.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The conversations that I continue to see are people thinking about investors. And they spend more time thinking about investors than they do customers, more time thinking about investors than their own team and what it would take to create the value and then to obviously be able to capture it. And, you know, in our past conversations, I've always had the sense that you've started with an idea and you've moved it from an idea to something that could actually create value for a customer, and you found a customer, and then you found a second customer, and then a third, and then things just move forward naturally from that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I have to confess, in my early years, I mean, I was, you know, back in 1989, 1990, when I first started, I was green. I made a lot of mistakes. I didn't necessarily get out of the building and ask the right questions and react to it in the way I should have done. So I've kind of lived the mistake which I'm advising or suggesting people, the trap they don't fall into, and. Well, when we started the business simulation company, and ever since, you know, it's always been a case of, right, we talk to people who might use this and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of this idea? Would this work for you? Okay, why not? Why wouldn't it? And even now we're developing new products all the time. But the whole thing is based on going and having conversations with clients and listening to what they're saying and just absorbing that and sharing the information internally and saying, well, what do we make of this? Not actually sitting in the office or in the warehouse or whatever, designing something and then trying and going and selling it, because it just doesn't work, and ultimately it just causes more pain than a little bit of rejection early on.
Well, I quite often share with my students this idea that, you know, passion leads to love, and love leads to trouble. And the context for this saying is that once you become so passionate about something, you have this potential to be blindsided, like you were in love. And once you're blindsided, you know, you bring trouble into the equation more than you need to. And I think a lot of people do fear that rejection. They've got this idea, they don't want someone to rain on their parade. And so they would rather focus on the possibility of a venture capitalist falling in love with them than actually having a potential customer not falling in love with them.
You made some really good points there, and I'm just making some notes because I've got to talk about those three things. Yeah, a venture capitalist typically is very, very experienced in business, and what they're looking for is solid research, market research, which proves out that there is something there. It doesn't matter how much you rant and rave about your own product, they know what they're looking for. I think the second thing you mentioned, this issue of rejection and why we don't like it and why we avoid it, and when I read Tim Harford and why success always starts with failure, and he actually gets into the neurology towards the end about why we do not like facing up to our own mistakes and error, and the brain is very lazy, and we've got to challenge ourselves when we get to those crucial points. But finally, you said that we talked about being blindsided. I was at a presentation in California in January with Diana Kander, who wrote a brilliant book called All in Startup. And she was doing a whole presentation was about curiosity, and she talked about blind spots and the fact that we all have blind spots. We have food on our teeth, she said. And what it is that it's we need to know the thing that everybody else can see, but we don't. And often, you know, it's being able to be straight with people and say to them when I'm working as an entrepreneur in residence, look, you know, you're doing X, Y, Z, but you're missing this and you're not seeing it. And I would say to every startup, look, you've got to know your blind spot. You've really got to know it, because that's where the trouble is. And that goes back to your point about passion, etc.
Yeah, you know, look, many years ago, I had the good fortune to meet Bob Ansett, who was a very famous Australian entrepreneur. And he said something that was so boring but so profound. And he just simply said, if you don't have a customer, you don't have a business. And if you don't have a business when you don't have a customer. And like, it was so simple, but it just goes to the very heart of it. It doesn't matter how much thinking and talking we do, most of the blind spots, I think, relate to the assumptions we make about customers, markets, customer behavior, market dynamics. We just assume, you know, we've got all the pieces of a Lego set and we can just put them all together and they'll all fit perfectly and we can just, you know, move along. But that's not really how the world works, is it?
No, but as you say, it's not how the world works. And entrepreneurs now, you know, have this phenomenal opportunity of being able to trade globally very easily thanks to the internet.
Yeah.
And so they have the tools at their disposal. You know, websites can now all be built for free. You know, WordPress, for example, is an amazing, you know, tool to use. But the problem is it seduces people into believing that, okay, I've got all these fantastic tools. I can trade potentially with billions of people. I can go on Amazon Marketplace or whatever. But way, way, way too many people make it far too difficult for themselves because they don't get out of the building. They don't ask the difficult questions. And some people might be listening to this and saying, oh, well, I've got customers and I seem to be doing okay. And I don't get out of the building. And I'd just say to them, well, what do you think could happen if you did get out of the building and you carried on trading? What might happen then? So, you know, the biggest challenge for people's long-term prosperity is engaging with potential customers. And you know, the more pain you can get, the more feedback you can get, the better your service or product is sharpened and made more customer ready.
Yeah, fantastic. Where do you see the Hitchhiker's Guide to Entrepreneurship, which is a fantastic blog? When you're about to tick over now to 100, so where do you see that going forward in terms of your own reflection and your own ability to help other people to engage in their own reflection?
Well, I must admit, I mean, I've written and written and written, but I'm becoming increasingly aware from feedback that people read less and less, or the written word is less and less popular. And so a natural direction is probably more podcasts and vodcasts and filming. And, you know, inspired by what you've done, Carl, you've done all of these podcasts. You did very well, and, you know, and it allows people to engage with what you've done at any time. But I was going to ask you at the same time, Carl, I mean, what do you make of what I've said about the biggest challenge being getting out of the building? I mean, you travel a lot and you read a hell of a lot, you know, and you as an academic, you know, way more theory than I do. What do you make of it?
Well, I think I'm being continually drawn back, you know, from my own ignorance. I used to have a sign in my office and it said, in the company of my ignorance, anything is possible. There's two ways to look at that. You know, there's two ways to look at it. I actually wrote that out. Whether or not I copied it subconsciously from someone else, or I'm sure other people have said those same words. But if you don't know, then anything's possible, but it doesn't mean it is possible, right? Sumner said that beautifully, purpose doesn't equal consequence. So I think the biggest challenge, I can break it down into three simple things, which I've talked about in past episodes. One, you got to understand who you are. If you don't understand who you are, then all of those assumptions that are being made are untested. They're not even recognized. They're those cognitive biases that we have. And so I think the more we can help people to take time to almost pull the handbrake on their life, notice how I'm bringing in all the analogies that have got to do with cars and highways today, Peter. That actually helps people, and we got to find them, help them to find ways where they clearly realize that their mind is on automatic pilot, or in your case, maybe cruise control, right? And we've got to find a way of getting people to realize that their mind has all these built-in faults, right? You know, it does most of the things we have to do in the day. It gets us through the day. But when it comes to starting a business or trying to create new value, these aren't everyday routine things we're going to do. These are quite complex things. And we can't rely on a mind that has been honed over thousands of years of evolution to allow us to do routine things to be used without question to do complex things. So that'd be the first one.
Okay.
Second one is that the average student we meet, they simply don't have sufficient social capital, human capital, and financial capital vis-a-vis the task that they're considering. And what I mean by that is they may have met some people at their university or an accelerator or in the business ecosystem environment, and that's all good. That's a great place to be sort of trying to find the social capital, but the social capital that matters is the social capital. It's the people you need to know in order to succeed, not to start. So it's easy to find the people to start something, right? That there's lots of people out there now. It's becoming an entire industry, but they're not necessarily the people that you need to know to succeed. Likewise, the knowledge that you need to know, as in the human capital, the specific knowledge or industry experience, it's easy to find the people who can help you start, but that might not be what you need to succeed. And vice versa, the last one is obviously financial capital, and that's, you know, the specific resources that you need, not just at startup, but through that process of building and hopefully being able to scale something. They're not that easy to find. That's why lots of businesses go broke. You know, they were fine. Everything was good for the first year and a half. It looked great. And then they tried to scale it. And they ran out of money. And ended up out on the street. So that would be the second point. The resource profile is generally insufficient. And so my general advice to people is do something simpler. You are who you are, and you know who you know, and you know what you know. Why don't you bring it back and either start in a much smaller way or do something that gives you that experience, and then you can build from that. And the last thing is, I think the biggest challenge we have is hype. The entrepreneurship landscape is littered with skeletons that, you know, once, you know, were carried along as able-bodied people, you know, because of the hype. So, and that sort of feeds back to the first one about knowing yourself, being able to separate yourself from the herd, so that you're not just carried along with what everyone else is doing, you're able to step back and really see it for what it is. I think that they're the three biggest things, I think, that are the real big challenges.
I completely agree with everything you're saying. I'm just focusing on one word there, is keeping things simple is actually quite complicated, but that's where it requires the deep thought. I will pick up on one thing you just said. When I started out, and I look back on when I started back in 89, and I think if I could change one thing, I'd say, right, why didn't I just start a simple business which got me out talking and meeting people? And the obvious one at the time, I lived in York, in the city centre of York, I could have started a bicycle courier company, met a load of potential clients for other businesses, got to know critically how business worked. And then, you know, excuse me, I'll just turn my phone off here.
You're all right, mate.
Sorry about that. But, you know, I'd have learned so much by just doing a much simpler business.
Yeah.
And then being able to apply it and not being worried about what other people were doing. You know, there's a, I'll move away from hitchhiking analogies. It's a bit like yachting, you know, trying just to get your boat to run as fast as possible at the start is not necessarily going to help you. Do the difficult stuff first, get into the headwinds, do the difficult stuff, because if you can get through that, you then can sort of tack about and really run. But possibly that's one too many analogies to use, or metaphor, or whatever it is. Probably best to stick to hitchhiking. But yeah, I agree with everything you're saying, Colin.
Yeah, and look, I mean, I think the thing that connects all of those things we've talked about, whether it's being prepared to go hitchhiking, and maybe you lived in a golden era where it was an easier thing to do, is the willingness to be vulnerable. I think that's just one of these, it's a hard thing to get people past. I try to do different things with my students, but I'll still get students who are panicking because they're worried that, you know, they're not going to do something perfectly for me. And yet I'm never looking for anyone to have done anything perfect, right? Well, what I'm looking for people to do is to be vulnerable, to back themselves, to have a go, to make sense of something.
Yes.
And well, that's a tough thing to get people to become comfortable with.
I think the best advert for vulnerability in today's society is Donald Trump. There is somebody who absolutely stands up and shows himself as being completely not vulnerable. And everybody that I've ever talked to has very little time for him. And I'm putting that politely.
Well, that's interesting. It's an interesting point you make, because I'm a supporter of Trump, and I've said this in previous episodes, not because I think he's an ideal person, but because he's not a politician. And I think it's important that countries have an opportunity to be run by people who aren't politicians, who have, don't have all the vested interests. And so that'll be an interesting one. And the voters, I think, will get... The great thing about America is, I think, because of those things you've just said, in a couple of years' time, the Americans will have a very clear choice. They won't be, oh, well, do we vote there again or not, or whatever. It'll be like, we either saw the benefits and liked it, or we didn't see the benefits and we didn't like it. And I think that's great. I think at every election, you shouldn't be umming and ahhing about who you should vote for. It should be pretty, clear cut.
I think it's probably, it's not so much the politics, it's just the personality. It's that when we show ourselves to be invulnerable, if such a word exists, you know, we don't draw people towards us, but when we're vulnerable and we show that side, people are naturally drawn towards us. And I think that is a something for every entrepreneur to bear in mind. And in all my time in business, I've seen that happen.
And I think the other side of that coin, the other side of the vulnerability coin, is conviction. And that's a, you know, a big thing that I talk to my students about, is people don't necessarily buy the best ideas, they don't necessarily buy things from the best dressed people, but they do buy from people who have a conviction, people who stand behind what their beliefs are, and you know, you really can believe somebody in that level of conviction they've got.
I think, and then when you've got a story and you've got conviction and it's based on what the market wants, then you've got, you know, you will draw customers towards you, especially if you're not too magnanimous, but if, you know, if you're coming across as arrogant because you've got something, then you will turn people off. People need to like you too.
Yeah. It's a tough balance, isn't it? Conviction, humility, vulnerability, confidence, they're all... It's a neat little thing to try and balance out.
Yeah, but you've got to bring all of those things together. But the biggest challenge is, at the outset, get out of the building, go and get some feedback, help that, listen to it, and help shape products or services with that information, and treat the pain as value. That's what I think, you know, more people need to do more often.
Absolutely, mate. That's a great place for us to finish on. It's been a pleasure to travel a mile down the Harrington's Highway, and maybe I should have gone for a drive in this direction, you know, a few episodes ago.
Well, it's been a pleasure, Colin. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
No worries. Good on, Peter. And look, all the best transferring your passions for blogs into vlogs and podcasts. I'll wait with anticipation to see what comes up. And if you haven't caught up with Peter's blogs, it's The Hitchhiker's Guide to Entrepreneurship, and it'll be well worth your time getting back there and going for a drive with Peter.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Colin.